I see that we have a lot of school-age students here today, and that's great. One thing, we have a requirement, you may have missed it as you came in, that when you come into an education committee, you must bring a pencil or pen and note paper so that you can take notes. And I don't see that any of you have done that.
So then,
absolutely, we are absolutely serious about this, because this is an educational experience. So we up here are very disappointed. No, actually, I'm kidding. Thank you for coming in. We appreciate that. No. And I do have to tell you that before I was elected in 1998, I really was a 37-year high school teacher and coach. So I really used to use that little speech from time to time, but I resurrected it today. But anyway, with that, we will open the work session on House Bill 2817. And Jim, you have a staff summary for us?
Yes, sir, I do. House Bill 2817 creates the Oregon Post-Secondary Education Council Task Force for the purpose of increasing coordination among post-secondary institutions in the state, specifies duties of the task force, and appropriates $500,000 for task force support. Sunsets the task force in 2006, and we have Dash 8 to discuss today.
Okay. I think we have Gary N. Dean here. Am I correct on that? Yes. Thank you, Gary.
Yeah. With pad and pencil. Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Gary Ann Dean. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Independent College Association. Pleased to be in front of the committee one more time with 2817. We continue to believe, as you heard from testimony a couple of weeks ago, that an opportunity to quietly sit back and think about the long-range future of higher education in the state, the needs of the citizens and the resources, both public and private, would be very advantageous in Oregon, as it has been in most other states that have such coordinating councils and advisory panels. We have been working on a number of amendments to this bill the last few days. Cindy Hunt, in her usual elegant manner, has managed to pull together a number of amendments into a single package, eight amendments, and have addressed many of the concerns that have come up in the last couple of weeks. In particular, we've taken a look at the Dash 1s and the Dash 5s that the community colleges asked for, felt that there was certainly a lot of rationale in both those amendments that had been factored into Dash 8. The Dash 2 amendments that removed any need to send this to the Ways and Means Committee for General Fund Appropriations has been incorporated into Dash 8. And finally, the Dash 7 amendment that removed the private for-profit institutions from these conversations has been also factored into Dash 8. So we bring this Dash 8 amendment to you and hope that you will look favorably upon it.
Okay. Any questions? Okay. We have some others who would like to comment on this. Is that true? We don't have a sign at front during the work session. Lisa? Yeah. Oh, and Andrea, very good. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Lisa Zavala with the Oregon University System. Mr. Chair, we have seen the Dash 8 amendments, and they did not incorporate the Dash 3 amendments to which the Oregon University System had submitted to you last week. We would still like the committee to consider those amendments. It places the Chancellor of the State System, the Commissioner of Community College Services, and the Chairperson of the Oregon Student Assistance Commission on the task force as members of the task force. The Dash 3 also, Mr. Chair, would replace those individuals on the advisory committee that's outlined in the bill with a provost from the Oregon University System as appointed by the Chancellor, and a chief academic officer as appointed by the Community College Services, Office of Community College Services. We believe that those are vital membership on the task force to determine the vision and direction of post-secondary education in the state of Oregon. Mr. Chair, if you'll indulge me for just a moment, I would like to make two issues I'd like to address today. On the Dash 8 amendments, the portion of the amendments that remove the general fund appropriation, we are concerned about that greatly. Mr. Chair, you remember in the House Bill 2015 from the 2001 legislative session, was formed by statute but was not funded. The commission therefore never convened and never met. We're very much concerned about startup costs for such a task force. We're very much concerned about staffing for a task force. Those issues are not addressed in the development of this legislation so far. The Oregon University system is experiencing some severe budget cuts, reductions, both in the co-chair's budget as outlined yesterday and the governor's recommended budget today. We would find it nearly impossible to offer staff support or any financial support for this task force at this time. We believe that that this legislature believes that this task force is a priority, is an important to the state. The work of the task force is important. It should attribute general fund money to it. I would strongly urge you to reject that portion of the amendments. Send this bill to Ways and Means to find general fund support for a task force to deal with an issue as important as post-secondary education in Oregon. The other issue I'd like to address, Mr. Chair, is in the initial hearing on House Bill 2817, a comment was made by the president of Willamette University. I'd like to respond to that. It was stated that Oregon does not have a vision for post-secondary education in Oregon. I provided to you a letter earlier this week from President James Lucier and Vice President Leslie Lehman of the State Board of Higher Education, which details the vision of the Oregon University system. That vision has been developed and renewed over the past 10 years. I would just like to make that statement for the record to correct what we believe was an inaccurate statement about the vision of post-secondary education in Oregon. So therefore, Mr. Chair, to summarize, I would urge you to adopt the Dash 3 amendments, House Bill 2817, if you see fit to move this bill today, and the Dash 5 amendments, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much. Appreciate the time that you've offered me.
Thank you. Andrew?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Andrew Henderson, Executive Director of the Oregon Community College Association. We share some of the same concerns that you just heard from the Oregon University system regarding the Dash 8 amendments. While we appreciate the inclusion of our Dash 5 amendments in the Dash 8 amendments, we remain very concerned for two reasons. We do support OUS's amendments and would like to see them incorporated into the bill. And second, we remain very concerned with the removal of the funding source in the Dash 8 amendments. We're very concerned that there's an interest in funding a task force on post-secondary education. It should be general fund dollars that fund it and not leave it to private donations. So for those reasons, we can't support the Dash 8 amendments today. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Gary, you have a rebuttal comment or a reaction to those comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll keep it brief. I appreciate those concerns. It was our concern about the state's budget that led us more than anything to suggest that we would try to raise this money on the outside, and you heard representatives from the business community as well as from our independent colleges indicate that as soon as this passes and is signed by the governor, we would set out to raise money for this commission. Cindy Hunt assures us that legally and technically and statutorily this works. This has been done in other bills. This is not, there's not a mechanical problem doing this. As far as the vision issue, I certainly understand that OUS does have a vision. We're very aware of and proud of that vision, but that is not a vision for Oregon. It's a vision for Oregon University system. The Oregon University system is not all the higher education resources in the state, and that's the vision that we're missing. We don't take into account in that vision all the resources that are available in the independent sector and that have been part of Oregon's higher education process and delivery mechanism for over 150 years. And we just feel it's time that the state had a broader vision of where it was going and how it was going to use all those resources, because particularly in these days, the public resources simply aren't going to be enough. Finally, with regard to the Dash 3 amendments. Of course, the whole point of having the task force is to get above the institutional interests and the sector interests and think about the long-range interests of everybody in the state of Oregon, and to put people on the task force who are looking out for their own institutions and their own sectors, we thought was inappropriate. So we suggested that there be an advisory committee where all those interests could be brought forward to the task force. I think I might have mentioned in my first testimony that it's my vision that the task force would be a very high-level blue ribbon commission made up of very distinguished Oregonians who are not connected to any one sector or any one institution, but are thinking only about the best interest of all the Oregonians now and in the future. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Dalton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I take exception to Mr. Andean's testimony that the Oregon University system lacks a vision for higher education for all students in Oregon. I just have a concern, and I'd like to state that on the record.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Committee, we're going to recess for this next few moments. We see Senator Decker here, who is here to testify, I believe, on Senate Bill 287. So we will recess House Bill 2817, and we'll open a work session on Senate Bill 287.
I just didn't bring it.
Drove them all away.
We hope we didn't drive anyone away or scare anybody. Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair, Ryan Deckert, 8375 Southwest Monica Court, Portland, Oregon, 97223. Are we in work session?
We are.
So I will contain my comments to about 30 minutes, just giving you the history of... you know this bill. You know the issue. We have the Dash 3 in front of you, which accommodates many of the concerns that were raised in our previous hearing. It changes the task force to an advisory group within ODE, recognizing, I think, the really wise comments that Representative Avakian made of not creating a new task force but using existing folks to do this. Really good bill. Probably the one bill that we will get through this legislature that really addresses child hunger in Oregon and feeding far, far too many kids that are hungry today and will be hungry this summer and getting some food in their hands. Would ask and really hope that this doesn't go to Ways and Means. This is our final stop. It's under $50,000. We've met with the chair of Ways and Means on the Senate side to ensure that we kept it under 50 so that we would not go down there. But this is an important step, and I hope this committee passes the bill to the floor and go on to the governor's desk.
Okay, thank you. Representative Avakian.
I just want to thank you for this, because we've been talking for months that the children are going to go front to the front of the line, and we've got very few objective examples of that, and this is one of them. I think it's a wonderful bill, and I'm glad we're able, hopefully, to pass it out today.
Thank
Good
you.
Work, Senator.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Hobson, do you have a motion for us?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move the Dash 3 amendments to Senate Bill 287.
Representative Hobson moves the Dash 3 amendments to Senate Bill 287. Comments? Any objection? Seeing none, the Dash 3s are moved. Representative Hobson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move Senate Bill 287 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and ask that the subsequent referral to Ways and Means be rescinded.
Thank you. Representative Hobson moves Senate Bill 287 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means be rescinded. Discussion? Gina, would you read the roll call, please? Excused.
Representative Scott. Aye.
Representative Farr, we're moving.
Aye.
Okay. Okay.
Aye.
Aye. Having received the constitutional majority, Senate Bill 287, as amended, is moved to the floor, and the subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means is rescinded. We better call for we called the roll, so we will close the public hearing, the work session on Senate Bill 287. And we need a carrier. Mr. Dalto, Representative Dalto, Representative Farr had already asked if he could carry this, if that's acceptable.
Thank you.
Well, Representative Farr will carry the bill.
Can I say one thing, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Highland Park Middle School just walked in, and that is where I went to middle school, so it's just a real honor for me to be up here for the Highland Park Raiders who just entered this. Thank you very much.
Senator Decker, one other thing, you've always had that youthful look, and there might be those of us who might think you're still a student. Middle school, and that's a compliment. Thank you very much.
At the risk of a revolt, Mr. Chair, I was a Mountain View Mountaineer myself.
Oh.
There were, of course, the Mountain View Braves back in those days. But
okay.
Oh.
Very good. Well, we will call the work session back to order in the recess on House Bill 2817. And committee, we need to decide about House Bill 2817. We've had a number of amendments. We've had a number of concerns expressed, and I'm sensitive to those.
Mr. Chair,
yes, Representative.
Would it be appropriate to stand down for a second?
Yes, we could do that. We'll stand down for just a moment. At any rate, we're aware that there are concerns, and if we move this bill, I'm sure the organizations expressing a concern will be visiting with those in the Senate. My view is that, from what I can gather, we need a vehicle in which to encourage discussion and maybe some coordination between and including the community colleges, the OUS system, and non-profit private universities, such as the one across the street at Willamette University or Linfield College or Lewis and Clark College and others. So it's my intention to move the bill with the dash eights. Do I have a motion? Yes, Representative Farr?
Mr. Chair, I believe we need to move this bill out of committee today, and I believe that the only way we can do it today is with the Dash 8 amendments. I would hope that some discussion would take place between here and the Senate regarding potential modifications to the Dash 8 amendments.
Okay.
And with that, Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 8 amendments to House Bill 2817.
Thank you very much, Representative. Representative Farr moves the Dash 8 amendments to House Bill 2817. Comments? Representative Dalto?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd just like to echo Representative Farr's sentiments.
Okay, thank you. Objections? Representative Vakin?
Well, I have an objection, and I guess I'll state it both in terms of the Dash 8 amendment and then won't restate them for the bill itself. And my concern is with Section 7 of the bill. Section 7 creates what I think is just an impermissible policy problem for us, where we create a government entity that is going to have some authority over our university system, but we give up the funding to that, and I would submit, therefore, control of that to private institutions, which absolutely turns the concept of governing and governance on its head. We don't discuss in Section 7 whether we're levying a tax, whether we're using general fund monies, whether we're using fees, any of the existing methods of obtaining money from citizens, which then go through a governmental process into a government institution. Instead, what we do is we just become what I would see as subservient to the private interests with private funding. And I think it's a policy decision that we just... that is just a shame that we would place ourselves in that position. And because of that, I just can't support the amendment nor the bill in its present form.
Mm-hmm. Representative, I understand your concerns, and that those have been brought to me by more than one person. My view is, of course, If we sent it to Ways and Means, there would not be any money to make this post-secondary education task force viable. It wouldn't work. It would die there. To me, the goal of discussion and working together potentially is a valuable thing. Once the money was into the account, the money would be drawn out as if it were a general fund money. As I understand it, I'm sure that's correct. Also, I think the key is the makeup of the task force and the degree of determination to make the task force work. And so the funding to me is less important than what the task force actually tries to do. And how much of a commitment the members of that task force have. So I understand that funding mechanism concern, but I guess to me the overall view that we need a task force or something like one is enough to allow me to support the Dash 8s as well as the bill itself when we get there.
If I may, Mr. Chair?
Yes, please.
I appreciate very much your comments and the noble intentions in creating something that will support higher education like this could. But I guess I would submit in response that if in light of a budget crisis like we have now, where I agree, if this were to go to Ways and Means, it would die because there's no funding for it. But when we're faced with that, to take the next step of saying, well, if the taxpayers of Oregon cannot provide for the own governance of the state, that we at that point decide we'll set it off to private industry and we'll let it be funded and controlled by another entity, then we are nothing as a government accountable to the taxpayers. What we become is a government subservient and accountable to some other private interest. And when we get to that point, especially in the midst of a budgetary crisis like this, we are nothing of a government. And I am even more concerned that we shift in that manner during the crisis than we're in. That's all. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Hobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is it appropriate at this time to discuss the bill, too, rather than just the Dash 8s? I'd go ahead and do that. If that's okay.
Well, we're on the Dash 8s right now.
I'll wait. If that's okay.
Yeah, that would be fine. Yeah. Gina, I think you better call the roll on the Dash 8s.
Representative
Scott?
Yes.
Representative Buckley?
No.
Representative Dalton?
Aye.
Representative Farr?
Aye.
Representative Hopsick?
No.
Excused. Aye. Gina, that is enough votes, is that correct? Okay, having received the constitutional majority, the Dash 8s are added to House Bill 2817. Representative Farr, do you have a motion at this point?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I move House Bill 2817. As amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Farr, excuse me.
Oh, and that the subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means be rescinded.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. Representative Farr moves House Bill 2817 as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation and the subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means be rescinded. Discussion. Representative Hobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to be voting against this bill for a number of reasons. And one of the main ones, before we even get into the details, is that it sets up another layer, another bureaucracy. It not only sets up task force, it goes on to set up an advisory committee to recommend things to the task force. So we have two more layers there. I believe, as my good colleague to my left here said, that there is a vision for higher education in the state of Oregon. It certainly needs to continue, and it needs to include the private colleges. I agree with that 100%. I want them in there. I'm also concerned about the source of the money. That is somewhat problematic. If it's good enough to do, it's good enough for us to pay for. And I say that, and I know it sounds flip because we know we don't have any money to pay for anything. But another pervasive factor for me is it brings together all of the universities, and we have no buy-in from the public universities and community colleges. They have great concerns about it. So it's almost like we're moving forward with a task force that is for the independent colleges when we don't have the others buying into the process. So even though I think the concept is good, I think the opportunity is already there for them to have this kind of communication and planning should they choose to do so. And I just can't see setting something else up during this time. So I'll be a no.
Okay, thank you. Well, my last comments on this. I've heard some excellent comments, and obviously well taken and well thought out. I hearken back to my coaching days in terms of some teams have better material than others, and my philosophy was we're going to do the best we can with what we have. And we don't have enough financial resources to do what we'd like to do. So we're going to do the best we can, given this issue of the importance of a task force. I do think we are protected in the way or to the extent that we have a good representation of people from the different levels that will be represented. I think that's a good thing. And so I have confidence that the goal of the committee will cause this task force, this post-secondary education task force, to work effectively together. So those are kind of my thoughts, and right, wrong, or otherwise, I guess we're ready to vote. Gina.
Representative
Robach. No.
Representative
Johnson. Aye.
Representative
Clark.
Aye.
Representative Hobson.
No.
Representative
Dawn.
Excuse.
Representative Scott.
Aye.
Aye. Having received the constitutional majority, House Bill 2817, as amended, is declared passed. Carrier? The chair will carry that one. Yeah, the chair will carry House Bill 2817. Well, thank you, committee. That was a spirited discussion, I know. And I know that you feel strongly about that, and I do understand. I close the work session. So we'll close the work session on House Bill 2817, and we'll open a work session on House Bill 2894. Jim.
Thank you, sir. 2894 allows the Superintendent of Public Instruction to grant extension of time longer than 12 months to a school district for remedying deficiencies. Limits longer extension to deficiencies based on primarily on funding. Takes effect on passage, and we have a -1 amendment to consider.
Okay, as I look back in our bill file, the -1s were requested to make this bill viable, I think. And so we need to discuss the -1s, and we understand that Bob Stewart from the ODE is here. And Bob, is that something you can do for us to discuss the -1s? Or Steve? Or Randy?
Anybody?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Steve Novick, Legislative Coordinator for the Department of Education. Thanks for the opportunity to address this bill. The reason for the -1s, which Superintendent Castillo discussed with Representative Barnhart, was that although she is sympathetic to the idea that in these troubled financial times there may be occasions where it makes sense to grant extensions of time to come into compliance beyond 12 months for financial reasons, she did not want to have that responsibility all to herself, and thought that it was more appropriate for the State Board of Education to provide criteria to guide her in deciding whether it's appropriate to grant an extension. And that was, I think, the primary reason for the -1s. We do have a slight concern about the language as currently drafted, which we think could probably be addressed on the Senate side if there's not time to address it here. On subparagraph B at the top of page 2, notwithstanding paragraph A, the superintendent may allow an extension of time that exceeds 12 months if the superintendent determines that the reason for the deficiencies is primarily the lack of adequate funds based on criteria adopted by the State Board of Education. Our concern is that sort of makes it look like the determination of whether a lack of funds is the issue is based on
criteria provided by the State Board, and I think what was in Superintendent Castillo's mind and Representative Barnhart's mind initially was it will be clear from the objective facts that the superintendent will determine that the issue is adequacy of funds, but in deciding whether that's a reason enough to grant an extension, she would apply criteria adopted by the board. So we would prefer to reverse the language a bit, but that's something I think would be taken care of on the other side if it's, it doesn't make sense to take care of it here. Thank you.
Yeah, Steve, you've raised a good point, and I think if we had a bit more time, we would be very interested in doing as you suggest, or considering, certainly. For the audience, we're under a bit of a deadline. We are to finish working, deciding whether we want to move these bills by today. That's the speaker's direction. And so we normally would take as much time as we need to try to get complete agreement on amendments and that sort of thing. But today we are under a time crunch, and the Senate will see these bills, and changes can be made between the House version and the Senate version. So the basic intent of the bill we think is pretty good. Maybe a detail or two needs to be clarified, worked out, improved. So much for that. Randy, you had a... You're here to support?
Yeah.
Okay, very good. Any comments, Representative Hobson?
No, I don't.
Oh, okay. Any comments? Okay. Well, did we pass the dash ones?
No,
we haven't. Okay. Any objections to the dash ones?
We need to get a motion first.
Representative Farr has not moved the dash ones.
No.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash one amendments to House Bill 2894.
Thank you. Representative Farr moves the dash one amendments to House Bill 2894. Any discussion? Any objections? So ordered. Representative Farr?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2894 as amended to the House floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Farr moves House Bill 2894 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Representative Hobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to vote for this with some concern because I think there can be some revisions done on the Senate side. My concerns are the same ones mentioned before, that I felt that when this bill first came before us, it was done at the specific focus of a particular school district who needed to have an extension on this for a number of reasons. That weren't necessarily related to what I considered the purpose here. I'm still concerned that 198 school districts could say I didn't make the standards because we didn't have enough money. Particularly in this climate, there isn't a single school district out there that couldn't use the excuse of not having enough money. But I think that this could have some advantage for one or two schools, so I won't oppose it. But I think some of the department's issues need to be addressed on the Senate side so that it isn't an open book for people to get waivers to meeting the standards that I think we all want them to have.
Thank you very much. Any other observations or comments? Okay, Gina, would you call the roll, please?
Aye.
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 Excused.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Having received the constitutional majority, House Bill 2894, as amended, is declared passed. A carrier. Representative Hobson, you look like you're ready. Okay, Representative Hobson will be our carrier. Thank you. With that, we'll close the work session on House Bill 2894, and we'll open a work session on House Bill 3044. And we've lost our committee administrator for the moment. Committee, this was the bill that was brought to us by Principal John Bolander at McNary High School in Kaiser, the intent being to be much more aggressive in asking or demanding, actually, that school districts collect or make a real effort to collect money when books are lost by students. School athletic uniforms perhaps are lost by students. Physical education uniforms, fees, fines, that sort of thing. And historically, it's been pretty much an individual school district concern about how much emphasis should be placed on this issue. Principal Bullander is retiring, and he would like to see this as one of his last positive steps. And I think in our present climate, our economic climate, and our lack of funding for K-12, it's been figured using simple arithmetic that there might be as much as $7 million that potentially could be recovered in a biennium if we aggressively sought payments for missing books. So that is the basic goal of the bill. We do have 286 high schools in Oregon. And I think is it not true, Jim, that we're on the dash six?
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
Yeah. And we had some concerns brought to us by Patty O'Sullivan. Is Patty here?
She's outside here. Moments ago.
Okay, she had some concerns, you remember, that dealt with some exceptions. What about students who did not speak the language of English? And this Portland Public School example was that someone from the Portland Public Schools would have to go out to that person's home. There'd have to be a direct contact. And it could be that if the missing book was valued at $50, the effort to do these things might end up costing $100 or more. And so it would be illogical to insist that this $50 be paid back to the Portland Public Schools if the total cost was $150, let's say. I think we also had another concern relating to an amendment. This part of this amendment is that we could not withhold a transcript of a special needs student. And that's been taken care of, I think, in this amendment. So I think in general that we've taken care of the concerns that were raised with regard to the details of House Bill 3044. So with that, if someone would make a motion... Mr. Redfield Scott?
I move that we adopt the dash 6 amendments to House Bill 3044.
Thank you very much. Representative Scott moves the dash 6 amendments to House Bill 3044. Discussion? Objections? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Scott?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I move House Bill 3044 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Scott moves House Bill 3044 as amended. With a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means. Is that correct, Jim? Okay. I'll say that again. Representative Scott moves that House Bill 3044, as amended, be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Okay,
discussion. Representative Hobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As you know, I will be voting against this bill for any number of reasons. The use of the word shall, it says that the school district shall get this money. I think they've been trying for hundreds of years to get that money, and it isn't that easy. One way that might work would be to stop students from participating in the graduation ceremony, but it appeared, at least from one person testifying, that for whatever reason wasn't going to be done. I feel it's another unfunded mandate for schools. It's real easy to say thou shalt collect this money. That means somebody has to pay attention to it to the point of following through with making a court case, and I mean really a court case against it, or turning it over to a collection agency. All of that takes a great deal of following up at a time when we certainly don't want the teachers to have to do this, and to have administrators doing it takes away from some of the other duties that they need to have. The challenge here is that we will withhold their records except when they need them to do something else. When they need them to do something else, it is to move to a different school, so they will have to send them then. And when they go to higher ed, so they will have to send them then. Then I would ask each of us, how many of us have copies of our records? Who gives a whiff if they are used for the purposes of getting us into other schools? So I think it's a meaningless consequence to that. I think there is a fiscal to this. I'm glad to see that it is going to Ways and Means, because it's going to take clerical staff, administrative staff, attorney staff, and even attorney costs. And I know I'm exaggerating a little bit here, but if you want to get to the point of collecting $7 million, it is going to take all of that and more. And quite honestly, I will say to you, I don't think you'll get the money anyway, because the majority of the people who don't pay those fines, I wish I could think of a better word, and I've tried. Deadbeats, does that ring bells? Are people who, for whatever reason, either don't have parents or have parents who aren't going to pay for it, and I just think it's a meaningless piece, and I'm not willing during this time to do meaningless pieces of legislation that impose mandates on schools. And I'll shut up with that.
That's fine. Thank you, Representative. Did anyone else have any comments? Representative Hobson, I feel a need to comment briefly.
I would expect no less from you, sir.
The bill was brought to us by a principal, and he had had great experience prior to becoming principal as a vice principal, and he had dealt with many of these students who, for simply lack of attention to detail or lack of a feeling of responsibility, just didn't return the books. The parents saw the books around the house from year to year, but really didn't pay much attention either. And so if we had a letter go out that indicated your son or daughter has lost this book, and books today may be $50, $60, $70 or more each book, I believe attention to detail would be achieved. I think it's a little bit like when we're driving down the road, if we see a state trooper parked alongside the highway, it gets our attention, and we tend to drive a bit better, perhaps. And I believe if we had something like this in effect, we would do a better job of getting back our books, and it would teach responsibility to the student, which I think is important. And I don't know right now, if there's no consequence for a lost book, that there's much sense of responsibility. So I'm willing to risk it, if that's the right word, Representative. And so I'm in favor of the bill as amended. Gina, call the roll, please.
Representative Fox.
Aye.
Representative Hobson.
No.
Representative Scott.
Aye.
Representative
Fox. No.
Representative
Dalton. Excuse? Aye. Having received the constitutional majority, House Bill 3044, as amended, is declared passed. We don't need a carrier. Is that correct? It's going to Ways and Means. Okay. By the way, audience, when we say it goes to Ways and Means, those are the money folks. So if you saw the movie Jerry Maguire, the famous line was, follow the money. And so we're called a policy committee. So we try to make policy in terms of this is what we intend to do. But if it costs money, it may be in trouble, it may not be in trouble. But the point is, the folks in Ways and Means will make that determination about whether they have enough money to move this bill on to the floor for full debate. So it's kind of, sometimes as a policy committee, we will work very hard to avoid a fiscal impact, because if it goes to Ways and Means, it sometimes doesn't emerge and it dies there. And if we're really fond of a bill, we don't want it to die there. So a quick lecture, I guess, on that point. Yeah. Thank you, Representative. We'll close the work session on House Bill 3044, and we'll open a work session on House Bill 3171. And Jim, do you want to talk about this while Representative Patridge is coming up to the table?
Yes, sir. House Bill 3171 creates a task force on school district consolidation. Directs task force to create a plan for school district consolidation and make recommendations about reducing administrative expenses of school districts. Declares emergency effective on passage. We have a dash two to discuss.
Okay, thank you. Representative Patridge.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. The lead-in from your last bill actually was great.
It's show me the money, Judge Backlund, instead.
Not follow it, but show
and,
me.
And that was the reason House Bill 3171 was put in, actually. It was about show me the money. As the members of this committee are well aware, as a Ways and Means member, I try and look at some of these Ways and Means types of things, and I also took a look at the Secretary of State's audit that happened during this last biennia in regard to what was happening with school districts around the state and how money was getting, as Representative Butler in my subcommittee is so fond of saying, how it gets to the end of the row, how it gets down to the classroom and the students. I think I had put in two bills this session. My other bill, which would have required one school district per county to do that, didn't look like it was going anywhere in this committee or in other parts of the building. But I do think we need to have a thoughtful approach to trying to take a look at school district consolidation and optimizing really the administrative and overhead expenses. Consequently, then in talking with other members of the education community, we have offered the Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 3171, that being also including educational service districts in the consolidation and taking a look at consolidation. Normally I don't like to task force things in this building, but I believe that we need a very thoughtful approach. We've worked collaboratively with the education community to take a look at this, and I think that there are ultimately some cost savings so that more water gets down to the end of the row, Mr. Chair. With that, Mr. Chair, you had me at hello, to use another Chair McGuire line.
Any questions, committee members? I might add, committee, Representative Package's bill is virtually identical to Representative Hobson's bill, but we chose this vehicle because I think it had a more comprehensive or a better relating clause.
Mr. Chair, we couldn't have included ESDs, unfortunately, with Representative Hobson or Representative Williams' consolidation bills, both of whom had similar or the same idea. Fortunately for me, mine had the relating to education relating to clause. So I would ask that Representative Hobson and Representative Williams join me on this bill should they choose to do that and file the appropriate paperwork with the clerk.
Representative Hobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative, for that information, too. I think one of the important things about this is we look at school funding, which we're going to be looking at broad picture. This is just a part of that big picture, and it's one that none of us wanted to lose. So we made sure, or we hope we're going to make sure, that it's in place. But it will not be done in isolation. It will be done as part of a comprehensive view of stable, adequate school funding for the future.
Okay. Mr. Rose, did you have some comments? I suspect, or I hope you're talking about the Dash 2s. Very good, very good. That's what we're talking about, Mr. Rose. Representative Hobson, you have a motion for us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move the Dash. You're going to tell me what to say here?
No.
We need to move the Dash 2?
Yes.
I move the Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 3171.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Hobson moves the Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 3171. Any discussion? Any objections? So ordered. Representative Hobson.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3171 to the floor with the due pass recommendation as amended.
Thank you. Oh, excuse me, Representative, we have a referral to the Ways and Means.
Then I would like to rescind the referral.
Please do.
I would like to add to my motion that we rescind the referral to the Ways and Means Subcommittee.
Representative Hobson moves the House Bill 3171 as amended, and the bill is referred to Ways and Means.
She said to rescind.
Okay, and the bill, how do I say this here exactly?
And the subsequent
referral to the Committee on Ways and Means be rescinded. We will get it right, hopefully. Okay, discussion. Okay, Dana, would you call a roll, please?
Aye.
Excuse me.
Aye.
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 Aye. Having received a constitutional majority, House Bill 3171, as amended, is declared passed.
That's law.
Yeah.
Okay. Do we have to carry it?
This? Oh, yeah. Representative, we'll name the carrier to be Representative Patridge. Even though he's left the room, I think he'd be happy to do that. So with that, we'll close the work session on House Bill 3171, and we'll open a work session on House Bill 3557. And Jim, staff summary, please.
House Bill 3557 exempts public charter schools that are operated by school districts from the requirement that public charter schools must be established as nonprofit organizations, declares an emergency, becomes effective on passage, and we do not have any amendments.
Okay. We have a couple of folks to testify, and
Mr. Chairman, Jim Green, representing the Oregon School Boards Association. You'll remember this bill was before the committee a couple of weeks ago, and we talked about several concerns, one of which is the cost associated with school districts that want to start charter schools. I brought with me today John Osborne, an attorney that worked with several school districts on this issue and actually is the person who contacted me to introduce this bill. So I was hoping John could share some of his concerns and the concerns of the districts he worked with on this issue.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is John Osborne. I practice law in Portland, and my practice is focused on local governments and particularly school districts. It's my privilege to represent a large number of school districts in East Multnomah County. The genesis of this bill is the work of a number of school districts to form what's called the Center for Advanced Learning. It is an alternative program for East County schools. It is a cooperative effort among Gresham, Barlow, Reynolds, Centennial school districts. We've recently been joined by Corbett School District, and the other major participant in the program is Mount Hood Community College. The program will provide education opportunities for students in each of these schools and provide programs for technical training that none of the schools could afford individually. The project is being built now, well under construction in the new mall in Gresham, right next to the Max line, and it looks like it's going to be an outstanding program. One of the things that has been done to advance this program is that the districts have cooperatively applied to the Department of Education for certification as a charter school. We have one little hiccup in that project, and that is that when the legislature enacted the charter school bill, there was an effort to try to avoid having for-profit organizations, assumedly from back east or someplace. So the requirement was imposed that the charter school be operated by a Section 501c3 nonprofit corporation. We can do this project through an intergovernmental agreement that, in fact, I've already prepared. If we have to go through a Section 501c3 and get a determination letter from the IRS, it's just unnecessary attorney's fees. It doesn't accomplish anything. It's an indirect way of doing what the school districts want to do directly.
Okay, very good. Now, Jim, I think you talked about this before. I think our hearing was on the 31st of March. This bill also would benefit Paisley?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, that's correct. Paisley School District is looking at becoming our first charter school district in the state, and they are working through the process. They've had several community meetings. They have buy-in from their communities, from their teachers group, from their students, from their parents. They've had numerous community forums. Joni Gillis from the Department of Education and I attended one of them where over 200 people were in attendance. they see this as a way to save that school district, at least in the short term, until we hopefully get some things fixed here in Salem with regard to funding, and especially funding small rural schools. It is an additional step. I spoke with Mark Jeffries, their superintendent. He indicated that in order to form that nonprofit corporation, they've got to find a board. That community is happy to have their school board serve in that role. They've locally elected those folks, and they want those folks to be the board of that school district, including once they become charter school. And as Mr. Osborne indicated, if they have to go the 501c3 route, it is an additional cost for them to go through that process. They're already working on very slim margin of dollars out there, and for them to expend those dollars on this process, they felt was a wastely proposition and wanted to see this bill advance as well.
Committee, I might add, I received a phone call from the superintendent at Paisley, Mark Jeffries, and he made a good point that sometimes we may forget to consider, and that is this would be, is this right, Jim, a three-year, if it's a charter school, it's for a three-year federal funding, and his point was within a three-year period that would give Paisley an opportunity to do a number of things. But the other thing, his big point was, this recession will end. Someday it will end, and this will give Paisley a lot of hope that that school district or that school can be salvaged and saved and keep that community identified with that school. And they fear that the town would literally go away if they don't have this school. So,
and Mr. Chair, that's not to say they wouldn't be able to do a charter school district without this bill.
Right.
It just creates another hoop and another process that they've got to go through and can potentially set them back a couple of extra months that they really don't have right now.
Mm-hmm. And I didn't say that as well as the superintendent did, but he made a very compelling case by phone, I thought. Do we have a motion? Representative Dalton.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3557. To the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Dalto moves House Bill 3557 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Discussion. Representative Abakian.
I want to step outside Paisley for just a minute and look at the language of the bill. What the bill does is it allows any school district to, in essence, enter into a contract with itself to charter a school and therefore exempt itself from nearly every state law that would have governed it otherwise. And with us allowing the 80-20 rule to sunset as we did, I think we are right on the brink of allowing entire districts to charter every one of their schools if they choose to under this bill, continue operating them and getting funding, but not abiding by all of the other regulations that we have put into law, virtually all of them. I combine that with the fact that Paisley, even though it is burdensome, can go get a solution through applying to the State Department of Ed. So we're crafting a law that's going to apply to everybody in the state for a specific situation that can be resolved another way. And I might add a law that I think is quite dangerous in terms of policy, because we lose control of our school districts, potentially. I think it's a noble intention, again, but the wrong vehicle in getting us to it.
Mm-hmm. Representative, my thought was the charter itself that would be drawn up would cover a lot of things that would have to be complied with, I presume, and that might alleviate some of your concerns, I would assume.
Well,
I'm using the word assume because I've not been personally experienced with the charter, although I know that Mr. Green has had a lot of experience, as has Joni Gillis.
The charter, of course, is governed by some of our state statutes, but it's in essence a contract between the school district and the entity they're chartering with. And there is a fair amount of room for negotiation within that. What we have here is we have a school district chartering with itself. In essence, drafting a contract with itself in order to do what? In order to avoid the regulations that we have in place for the very district that we're allowing to all on its own step outside of. So, if there were, for instance, an absolute formatted charter contract that would take care of, I don't know, whatever concerns give rise to this, maybe that would be something different, but I don't believe that that is the way that the charter school law reads, and this really, well, I that's enough, Chair.
Well, that's fine. Committee, we'll stand at ease for just a moment. Come back, and I'm presuming in response to Representative Avakian's concerns.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to try to address a couple of them, and I'm not quite sure I can address all of them, but I will try to explain what goes on in charter school land. Even though there is a contract in this case between the district and itself, we still have one more cap that is yet to sunset, and that's due to sunset January 1 of 04, which is no more than 10% of a district's population can attend a charter school. So even in Paisley's case, they're going to have to apply to the State Department of Education for a waiver from that process. Also, if a district wants to convert its entire district to charter schools, they can only do so under our state law if they are a single building school district. So districts, even the size of Silver Falls and smaller like Sisters, would not be able to convert their entire district to charter school status under our state law. That exclusion only works for a single building school district, of which there are some in this state, one of which is Paisley. And also remember under our charter school law that student attendance at a charter school is voluntary. So if, in Paisley's case, they want to convert, every student has to have the ability to say no or yes, I want to attend that charter school. Also, staff assignment to a charter school is totally voluntary. So if one teacher in that school district said, I don't want to become a teacher in that charter school, they wouldn't be able to do so. They'd have to find another place for that person to work. And in Paisley, being a one-building school district, it just wouldn't work if parents and kids didn't want to go or the staff didn't want to work there. And that's part of our charter school law currently. That's why Paisley's taken 2 years' time to do this process to make sure that everybody's on board, to work with their staff and their entire community to make sure this occurs. And that's the case in Paisley. The case at the Center for Advanced Learning, not only is that a contract between all four of those districts, the community college, they're also working with the State Department. So the State Department is overseeing that contract as well to make sure that all the steps are being met, because one of the parts of the things at the Center for Advanced Learning is that that's to address CAM and some of those additional processes to make sure that those kids get a full-rounded education. So the State Department is also overseeing that part of it. And that may not address the total concern of Representative Abaki, but those are some of the safety valves that we put in the charter school law back in 1999 when we passed it.
Okay. I believe we're in work session. Is that right, Jim? Okay. Representative Hobson?
Thank you. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be voting for this bill, and as you know from our last discussion, I had some real serious concerns because I thought it was crafted again for one school district. I too have spent time talking with folks from that particular school district and have pointed out to them that it seems to me this is a stopgap manner to keep their school open for a year, two, or three longer. And I felt that the two people with whom I spoke were very cognizant of that fact and realized that if something big doesn't happen to change the funding for schools in the future, that they will indeed have to look at consolidation. And, of course, I say that in conjunction with the bill that we just passed that deals specifically with that dirty word. On the other hand, there is federal funding available. They have some of it. They can get more of it. And I guess I'm going to be totally crass on this thing. And if they don't get it, what do? Send it back to the federal government. And I'm probably not in favor of doing that. And the bottom line, for the next 3 years, while they use this money, they are, in fact, educating kids. And I would surmise doing a good job at it. So until we solve the overall problem, I will support something like this.
Representative Vakin.
The safety valves that Mr. Green talked about are leaving us. We've already allowed the biggest safety valve, the 80-20 rule, to sunset. The other one is already scheduled to sunset. I don't see the safety valves, and I don't believe, my interpretation would not be that this is going to be limited to one school building district, of which there are virtually just a handful. if what we want to do is provide safety valves for the system that we have, take House Bill 2509, lump it back into this one, and then we'll have the safety valve. But we're not doing that. We're pushing this forward without the safety valves that we're letting go. And we're doing it when we have already legislatively created a system that should accommodate Paisley. If that system is broken, we ought to be going back and fixing that system as opposed to creating a new one, which is what we're doing. And for those reasons, I won't be able to support the bill.
Gina, call the roll, please. Excuse.
No.
No.
Aye.
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 Aye. Having received the constitutional majority, House Bill 3557 is declared passed.
Carrier.
Carrier. Representative Hopson volunteers. Thank you, Representative. We'll close the work session on House Bill 3557, and we'll open a work session on House Bill 3564. Representative, should I announce this?
James Scott.
Before we open the work session on House Bill 3564, I should close it first, I guess, technically. Close the work session on House Bill 3564. Reopen a work session on House Bill 2894 for the purpose of announcing for the record that Representative Phil Barnhart will carry the bill. Representative Barnhart on 2894. So we'll close that. Now we'll open the work session on House Bill 3564. Jim.
Yes, sir. House Bill 3564 appropriates money from the general fund to Child Care Division of Employment Department for provision of child care assistance to low-income post-secondary students. Appropriates $1 million from the general fund, and we have a -1 amendment. -2, I'm sorry.
-2?
Yep.
Okay, and we have some folks to testify. Very good.
Chair Backman, members of the committee, for the record, Rocky Dollum, Legislative Director for Oregon Student Association. We just submitted to you a brief history of the Student Child Care Block Grant, and we have before you the -1 amendments, which would remove the appropriation and put a blank so we can use this bill as a vehicle to get a placeholder and perhaps create the program in the future. And Rachel,
excuse me, Rocky, you said -1, we have -2.
-2.
Okay.
Yes, I'm sorry.
Okay.
And Rachel Pouliot will make a brief statement about the program now.
Chair Bachman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Rachel Pouliot, Chair of the Oregon Student Association and President of the Associated Students at the University of Oregon. Today, I am speaking in support of Senate Bill 718, specifically on behalf. I'm sorry.
House Bill 3564.
That's what I meant. Not Senate Bill 718. That was fun to testify on too. However, and the hundreds of families that will benefit from the restoration of the Student Child Care Block Grant. Too often, student families are forced to choose between providing care for their children or receiving an education. The rising cost of attending post-secondary education and the expenses related to securing quality child care to prevent student parents from getting a degree and increasing their financial stability often prevents student parents from doing so. The state's response, especially during the budget crisis, has largely been a trade-off, suggesting that student parents stay out of post-secondary education and receive child care benefits through state welfare programs. The Student Child Care Block Grant is a solution to these problems. It increases access and affordability in education, reduces reliance on public assistance, and creates social and economic returns for the state. Investing in student parents has many long-term benefits. Workers who receive a bachelor's degree earn up to 75% more than workers with a high school diploma. Children who receive quality child care generate $3 to $7 for every dollar invested. Children whose parents receive a college diploma are more likely to pursue one themselves and will have higher lifetime earnings, lower rates of unemployment, fewer teen pregnancies, lower crime rates, and fewer incarcerations. Assisting student parents is a short-term investment with many long-term returns. Restoring the Student Child Care Block Grant is important to students and the state. Oregon, more than ever, needs an educated workforce.
That's great.
High unemployment rates signal an increased number of displaced employees and out-of-work families. There is a larger number of Oregonians looking to get a better education and once again become financially independent. This program will help them achieve that goal. Less than a year ago, there were over 2,000 families either receiving the grant or on the waiting list. While the state could only serve a fraction of that population, the demand for this program is continuously growing. Currently, there is no state support for student parents looking to secure quality child care. The Student Child Care Block Grant is essential for students, their children, and for Oregon. In these difficult budget times, it is important that we restore the program with or without immediate funding so that when monies become available, we can help educate more Oregonians and provide a better future. Thank you.
Thank you.
We're willing to answer any questions you have regarding either of the two amendments.
Rocky, the dash two amendments indicates that that you're asking to delete $1 million and insert a blank line, and that's so Ways and Means can determine any amount of money it chooses? Or
yes.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Dalton?
Yeah, we actually have a dash one as well. I don't know if everybody has the dash one.
I do not. I don't know if it's...
I don't have a dash one.
You don't have a dash one?
I didn't get a dash one.
Okay. Can we distribute the dash one?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we've been speaking to the dash twos. You're interested
right.
in the dash ones as well?
Right. The
in
dash
addition
one,
to the dash
in addition to the dash ones, okay. The dash ones just make a minor adjustment. Perhaps we could recess this and move on to the next bill for photocopies to be made and distributed.
Okay. Okay. We will recess the work session on House Bill 3564, and we'll open a work session on Senate Bill 238. Jim.
Yes, sir. Senate Bill 238 allows the state library to report statistical data on public school and other libraries.
You are back from a previous...
Yeah.
We ran out of time, I guess. Yeah. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jim Chepke. I'm the director of the Oregon State Library. Senate Bill 238 comes to you from the governor at the request of the State Library Board of Trustees. This bill would authorize the State Library to begin for the first time to annually report on the condition of school libraries in our state, which is something that we've never done in the past. We've reported on public libraries since 1909, but we've never been able to report on the situation in our state with school libraries. And we feel it's very important to do so. School libraries are addressed in the quality education model, but we literally don't have any data that shows what's happening with school libraries in our state. We recently learned that the Department of Education is collecting data from the districts. They just don't do anything to report it, to analyze it. And so the plan that we developed with the Department of Education was for them to give us this data that they've already collected, and we will use that to report on school libraries. And for this reason, there's no fiscal impact to this bill. We can do this within existing resources. The major cost here is to get the data from the districts, and the Department of Education is already doing that. So there would be no additional cost for the districts, for the Department of Education, or for the State Library, and it would enable us to begin to know how school libraries are faring in our state. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Incidentally, on that subject, do you have any guesses? How are school libraries faring?
Mr. Chair, the bad news is that they're not doing very well at all, and we have today Kelly Coons, who's the president of the Oregon Educational Media Association, and she could speak to that.
Okay, thank you.
Kelly Coons, Chairman Macklin, and members of the committee, my name is Kelly Coons. I am the president of the Oregon Educational Media Association and also proud to be the instructional technology coordinator for the Beaverton School District. You met some of our students recently, and I see that we have some proud alumni here.
Yes.
The Oregon Educational Media Association does indeed endorse Senate Bill 238, which would authorize the State Library in conjunction with the Oregon Department of Education to begin to analyze and report on the annual statistics of Oregon school libraries. The Oregon Library Association also endorses Senate Bill 238. As recently noted in the January 2003 issue of the School Administrator magazine, in an article entitled A Source for Better Schools, the School Library, Kathy Patton, the author, stated that school test scores for students would be 10 to 18% higher for schools who have better developed library programs than students in schools that have very weak or no library programs at all. And this statement was based on 8 statewide studies that have been conducted since the year 2000. So they're all very current. In the states, Alaska, Pennsylvania, Colorado, Massachusetts, Texas, Iowa, New Mexico, and in Oregon. In Oregon, in the year 2001, 513 of our schools in the state of Oregon were examined. They looked at the test scores of the students in grades 5, 8, and 10, and they looked at their scores on the Oregon State Reading Test, and they found that the student test scores positively correlated with how much a school library had in the way of professional and support staffing, how much time that library staff spent teaching information literacy skills, how much time was spent planning with teachers and providing in-service training, the number of hours that that library was open and available to students and staff, and the existence of a relationship between the public library and the school library. And finally, how many computers were available in that library media center and throughout the school that allowed students to access the library catalog, the licensed databases, and the Internet. Last summer, First Lady Laura Bush had a White House conference on school libraries, and she invited Keith Curry Lance, the author of those studies, to speak, and he stated clearly, based on research, the size of the library in terms of staff and collection is a direct predictor of reading scores. Clearly, Senate Bill 238, which has absolutely no fiscal impact, is an important step in providing the statistical data in the quality of our school libraries here in Oregon. And on behalf of OEMA and OLA, I request your support of 238.
Thank you. Kelly, I hesitate to ask this, but maybe it's a softball question, so it's a good time to ask it. Is there any opposition to this bill?
Chairman Dackley, not that I'm aware of.
That's the answer I was hoping for. So, thank you. Representative Hobson.
Thank you. Just a quick question, Kelly. I think that the studies you mentioned are very, very interesting. Was there any attempt to isolate and disaggregate that and show the relationship of socioeconomic status on the quality of the libraries?
Chairman Backlund, Representative Hobson, absolutely, because in the past it's been assumed that in wealthy school districts you have higher achieving students, and that was the power of these studies in that they did go through and disaggregate the data.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Colleagues, one thing I might mention too before we try to move the bill is if we went into any virtually any school nowadays, we don't call them libraries anymore, I don't think. We call them media centers, or we call them library media centers. It's really quite remarkable to browse through a high school library, in this case, media center. I had the opportunity to do that Monday evening. McNary was dedicating its new library, or refurbished library, and it was really quite remarkable. In the 5 years since I'd been there, there have been remarkable changes. It was very, very impressive. So it's a very attractive place. It would, I would hope, draw students like a magnet draws nails, and I can see why there would be more learning. And so anyway, with that, I think we have a fine bill in our hands here. So, Representative Hobson, would you?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I move Senate Bill 238 directly to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Hobson moves Senate Bill 238 to the floor, actually directly to the floor, with a do-pass recommendation. Discussion? Gina, would you call a roll, please?
Representative Scott.
Aye.
Representative
Scott. Aye.
Representative Delta. Excuse.
Aye.
Aye.
Excuse. Aye. Having received a constitutional majority, Senate Bill 238 is declared passed, and Representative Avakian has volunteered to carry the bill. We'd love to have you do it, sir.
Thank you.
And thank you very much. Well, we're missing a... yes. Stand at ease for just a moment. Members, please. Here? We do, don't we? Yes. Possible, we're going to reconsider and do a work session on House Bill 3480. Chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and reconsideration of House Bill 3480 be taken up immediately. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Chair requests unanimous consent that the motion on House Bill 3480 to do pass as amended be printed and grossed, be reconsidered. Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Okay, Jim, would you bring us up to date? This bill has had a lot of action here in terms of a lot of work and a lot of focus. So maybe you can kind of update us.
I will, sir. In the packets, you have two amendments. You have a dash 3 and a dash 4. The dash 3, it was requested that that be presented today, and what it will do is... instead of requesting two FTE in the Department of Education, it reduces it to one. I do not have a fiscal for that one position, what that would cost. What I did include is the last fiscal that we received from the LFO when we were talking about two. So we should be able to come close to what that might be. The dash 4 amendment, it corrects the dash 3 that you have, and it adds language that was left out, and that's on page 2, lines 18 and 19. What this will do is it will utilize specialists within the department, creating a division for talented and gifted children.
Okay.
We do have folks here from the...
Yeah, I was going to say, do we have some folks who would like to speak to this? Bob, are you able to come up
on this bill?
We jumped Representative Dalton to House Bill 3480.
Can we take just a minute so I can catch him?
Yes. We'll take a very brief recess. So we have a quick conference. Open the work session on House Bill 3480. Representative Dalton.
Yeah, I have a question before I do that, if I might.
Yes.
A question of the department. Now, we have a dash 3 amendment that we're about to consider, which makes some adjustments, and we'll have to get that to you. But my question is there a potential for the Oregon Department of Education to use funds received under the federal No Child Left Behind Act to be placed to fund the FTE that we were discussing about creating?
Give me a second to think about these.
By all means.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Bob Seward. I'm the Associate Superintendent for Curriculum Instruction Field Services in the Office of Special Ed.
I guess it's been brought to my attention by the Legislative Fiscal Office that there are other examples of where we've used specific federal funding dollars to do things like this. So I'm wondering if we have that potential.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Representative Dalto, I can, as I think back over the several sessions I have worked in the department, I have seen budget notes that have directed the department to use a certain federal funds to accomplish certain outcomes, and that has occurred. So there is that potential.
There is that potential. What are you saying?
Representative Hobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Would it also be true that there are opportunities for some of that money to be directed in any way that the discretion of the State Board of Education chooses?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hobson, that would be true within the constructs of the federal grant program from which the money would be used. So I'd have to think about which of the federal programs under the No Child Left Behind Act that we could take a look at and use funds for accomplishing outcomes for talented and gifted. However, talented and gifted is described and is a permissive component of No Child Left Behind.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Would it not be true, Mr. Seward, that no matter what amount of money you pull from one or you put in one program within your existing budget is going to be taken away from some other program?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hobson, that is correct. We have currently fully utilized all of the, in the office that I work with, in Curriculum Instruction Field Services, we've fully utilized the Title II funds and the Title IIA and Title IID, which is highly qualified teachers and technology. Those are our administrative dollars are fully utilized to administer those programs and to provide technical assistance. So I need to think carefully and clearly about what does not get done in the way in what we're doing today in order to get that done if that is what the directive is. And I would assume that you'd want to know about what those trade-offs would be.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair.
Oh, excuse me. Mr. Representative Farr. Excuse me.
Do you know of any vacancies in your department?
Mr. Chair, Representative Farr, yes, I do. I have, it depends on which office, but for the Curriculum Instruction and Field Services, I currently have 4.5 FTE vacancies in Office of Special Education. I have, I think, 1.75 FTE vacancies.
And these are funded vacancies?
Mr. Chair, Representative Farr, for the Office of Special Education, these are funded vacancies. In other words, I have the cash in order to pay for it if we could hire for those positions. In the Office of Curriculum Instruction Field Services, those positions were vacant and remained vacant because the general funds were reduced through the five special sessions, and I do not have the money to fill those positions.
So you have 4.5 funded vacancies then?
Right.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Dalton?
I move the Dash 3 amendments to House Bill 3480.
Thank you. Representative Dalton moves the Dash 3 amendments to House Bill 3480. Further discussion? Objections?
Yes.
So noted. Representative Hobson objects. Any other objections? Okay. The Dash 3s are declared passed. Representative Dalton?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3480 to the Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation as amended.
Representative Dalton moves House Bill 3480 as amended to due pass as amended, be printed engrossed, and be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Gina, call the roll. Excuse me, Representative Hobson. Sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have to do my perennial no vote on this. I do feel pretty strongly about this one. I feel that we are mandating staffing allocations to the department. I think there are ways that we can provide them with direction and suggestions, and I think they really got the message on this, worked very collaborative with members of the committee and with staff to come up with a reasonable alternative, which were the Dash 4s. And in the Dash 4s, it pretty well told the department, and the department had agreed, excuse me, that there would be a division of talented and gifted set up, and that the specialists currently in place would be used and would focus some of their time on that. And I don't think I'm the only one that feels strongly, because in our fiscal report, our fiscals from both when we had 2.0 FTE apportioned to this and 1.0 FTE, it says, and I quote, "Second, the Legislative Assembly, that's us, does not statutorily establish specific staff levels." I want that in the record because I think that's fairly clear. We are the Legislative Assembly. This bill does, in fact, statutorily establish specific staff levels. So I am very much opposed to this. I'm opposed to it in concept because I believe that Talent and Gifted is done. My good colleague from Eugene and the Bethel area mentioned how well TAG is done in the Eugene School District. I just happened to find this on the web for the Lincoln County School District. They sent it. I know in Beaverton there's strong TAG. There are TAG programs all over the state. I feel like we've been given the impression that TAG programs are non-existent and that kids are in dire circumstances because of this. And I don't buy that basic premise. I think the department has the word that they need to attend to this more, and I think we're violating our own advice from legislative from the fiscal office, and I will be a strong no.
Representative Bakken?
Just to very briefly add, I am from the Beaverton School District, and I think they do an admirable job of trying to provide TAG services, but that they struggle. And that isn't any blame on the Department of Education. They struggle because we haven't created a system that gives them the resources they need. And I know personally children who are in dire straits because they're not getting those services. So, just to add to the record, my observation.
Okay, thank you.
And in fact, Mr. Chair, I think one of my colleagues on this committee testified about a specific personal experience about a student having adverse impacts because they weren't being served adequately. You know, I consider the Dash 4s. The Dash 4s, in my opinion, are inadequate, and that's why I'm moving the Dash 3s.
Okay. Gina, call the roll, please.
Aye.
Representative
Bell.
Aye.
Representative
Clark.
Aye.
Representative
Thompson.
No.
Representative Nolan.
Excuse.
Representative
Scott. Aye. Aye. Having received a constitutional majority, House Bill 3480, as amended, is declared passed. We'll close the work session on House Bill 3480, and we'll reopen the work session on House Bill 3564. And we left off some moments ago. It took a lot longer than I expected, so we apologize for that.
Mr. Chair, when we last left off, we were considering the Dash 1 amendments. I wanted Mr. Down to have just a brief opportunity to explain what the Dash amendments, okay. 1 amendments do.
Okay, fine.
Chair Backlund, members, the Dash 1 amendments deal with the section of the bill that would give priority to students who are on the waiting list or receiving a program, but in the event that funding isn't available until the next biennium or after that, that would require the department to use a database that by that time would be outdated. So this just removes a section that statutorily requires them to give priority to those students, so which is something that they would do if funding were available now anyway. So thank you.
So, Representative Dalto, you would like to see the Dash 1s and the Dash 2s.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we will do these one at a time. So, Representative Dalto, do you have a motion?
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 1 amendment to House Bill 3564.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Dalto moves the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 3564. Discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Representative Dalto?
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 3564.
Representative Dalto moves the Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 3564. Discussion? Objection? So ordered. Representative?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3564 as amended to the Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Dalto moves House Bill 3564 as amended. Be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Further discussion. Gina, call a roll, please.
Representative
Aye.
Representative
Aye.
Excuse.
Representative
Nolan. Aye.
Representative
Aye. Aye. Having received the constitutional majority, House Bill 3564 is declared passed.
Carrier.
Representative Dalto. Committee, we've done relatively well considering we had a pretty heavy slate today. I think we've covered all the bills, have we not?
2843.
Oh, 2843. I do not think we need a reconsideration on this one, do we?
I don't think so.
Yeah. Well, hang on just and check that out. We thought both of these had to be referred to Ways and Means, but the chair of Education Ways and Means has indicated that that this is under the limit and that that we're okay. Is that what you see?
2843. That's great. Okay. And I need to make a correction on the last bill, 3564. We don't need a carrier. It's going to Ways and Means. That's
okay.
Error.
We don't need a carrier. So you're off the list, Representative Dalton. Okay. With that, then, we will adjourn the meeting. And we had the room, by the way, until 5 o'clock.